1690 AM in Montreal.
Hello, you're listening to CJLO News. Liberal MP for NDG Westmount, Anna Ganey, canceled her local campaign launch event shortly after the group Vote for Palestine announced they would be protesting at the launch. Ganey is running for re-election in NDG Westmount riding, which is considered a liberal stronghold. The activist group Vote for Palestine is a national movement with a contingent in the riding. They say getting in touch with Ganey has been a challenge. Here is one of their members, NDG resident Jade S., who has chosen to hide his last name due to recent doxing attempts.
We've written and or tried to meet with Anna Ganey for almost a year now. There have been several attempts at writing her, we've intersected at certain events, for example, within NDG. But when she's there, she says, oh, I don't, you know, she kind of reacts like, oh, please talk to my people.
Ganey had a campaign launch scheduled for the evening of March 24th. The group, Vote for Palestine, after over a year of attempts to meet with Ganey, announced that morning they would be protesting at the launch event. Later in the day, the event was canceled with no explanation from the Ganey campaign. Vote for Palestine in NDG is taking credit for the cancellation.
Now she's canceling events if we try to protest, which is ironic because it's giving way more visibility than if she had just actually met and tried to listen to the very basic requests that we want to make.
Vote for Palestine's main goal is getting the issue of Palestinian human rights on the agenda during this election campaign. The Israeli Defense Force announced recently they plan on going forward with the Trump administration's proposal to forcibly remove all Palestinians from Gaza. Israel's action in Gaza and the West Bank have been condemned by a myriad of human rights groups, including Amnesty International, who have declared the country's military campaign a genocide. Vote for Palestine wants to see candidates in this election promise to fight for a stronger two-way arms embargo and sanctions against Israel in Canada's parliament.
You know, just basically human rights activists. There's a strong queer contingent, there's a strong Jewish contingent, we work with independent Jewish voices, we work with Jewish Voices for Peace, we work with Montréal Nord for Palestine, anyway, whatever. Like you say, the cloud of people that are trying to activate the Vote for Palestine campaign really just want to put that issue on people's minds within the top 20 issues that will be raised in this election. And visibility is our key. So we will be protesting whoever is taking an anti-Palestinian position, and we will be trying to meet and convince people that are convincible. So we thought Anna Ganey was convincible, and we're more and more now convinced that she is not. So those are the elements where we want to push forward, and we want to make people aware that the politicians that they're voting for may just be pro-genocide.
The movement is focused on meetings with MPs and MP candidates across Canada, regardless of party affiliation. Multiple candidates in this election have met with members of the group and embraced their agenda. Currently, 23 Liberal candidates across Canada have signed a Vote for Palestine pledge to make Palestinian human rights an issue in this election. Here in NDG, the NDP candidate, Malcolm Lewis Richmond, has been receptive to the group and also signed this pledge. Anna Ganey did not attend an interview with CJLO after one had been scheduled, with no follow-up. CJLO has been attempting to interview Ganey since before her campaign for re-election was announced. She has made no public statements on record regarding the Vote for Palestine movement. For the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Adam Innes.
Hello, everybody. Happy Sunday. Welcome back to Afro Archives. I have a special episode for you guys this week. We are going to be doing an interview with the lovely Okay Naledi. They are a Canadian Motswana artist who makes Afro House, a genre that we featured a few times on this show. And we're going to be talking about everything to do with race, sexuality, and ethnicity in the music scene, both in Africa and in Canada. So I'm super excited for that. And I'm not going to do much talking this time because I want you guys to hear as much of our conversation as possible. But if you want to find out the songs that I've played today, they are all from OK Naledi's album Bones, and there will be a playlist on the website, and I will also post more information on the Instagram at afro.archives, and that's archives with two S's. So without further ado, welcome to today's episode.
Obviously, you know, I discovered you on Bandcamp, and what really got my attention was the little blurb that you wrote about kind of your journey. So I was hoping we could start with you just introducing yourself and then telling us a bit about how OK Naledi came about.
Sure. Also, excellent pronunciation. And I'm wondering why you pronounce that so well first.
Mozambican. So when I saw Naledi, I was like, oh, Southern African, yay.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Nice. I've been working in music for almost 10 years now, and I've been in Canada for longer than that. But I grew up in Botswana, and coming to Canada, it's a big shift in terms of the music styles that you hear on the radio in comparison to what I used to listen to and I'm accustomed to listening to back home. So I really wanted to find a way to kind of incorporate my heritage and incorporate, you know, some sub-Saharan flavor into my music to showcase it, but also just to like represent myself and my communities. I mean, Botswana, there's not a lot of us here, but, you know, it's good to kind of like enrich the Canadian landscape with all the different kinds of sounds that that exist here and are from afar. So that's kind of why I wanted to create this project. It's a very new project. Even though I've been doing music for a long time, I started it in 2021. It was during the pandemic. There was, anybody who looked like us didn't have a great experience in the pandemic. Maybe you can relate to this. So it was a really kind of an awakening for myself in terms of just realizing how important it is to represent myself and be authentic in my art creation for myself, but also for my communities. I'm also queer, so I know that, you know, being queer is not something that's easy in most parts of Africa and as well as Botswana. So there's a lot of multi-layers that I really wanted to make sure were forward and present in my music for myself and also for anybody who is relating to that. I think that answers the questions. That felt long, sorry.
No, don't worry, we have so much time, but definitely. And, you know, that's really what Afro Archives is about, why I started it as well, is for that representation and just to expand people's minds as to what they're open to listening to and what kind of music they can enjoy. Because I feel like so much talent in Africa that is just, it's limited and it deserves more recognition.
Absolutely.
And the spotlight of the week started because on Canadian radio, there's a CanCon requirement. So something has to be written in Canada or produced in Canada. So I thought, I know there are Africans in Canada making music, so I will find them because I don't want to deviate from what my show is about, which is Africans.
Yes.
So yeah, I was really excited to find you, and I feel like your story aligns well with what the show is about. So you kind of answered this already, but I guess...
were kind of blurry in our haze, and I didn't even know that the way that we would go would lead us down this road. Go slow, voice and every tone, and message in his words when you can read through every verse. Pick apart the notes and start again. It kinda crept up that the messed up way we started was a letter from the future saying, dearly departed. I didn't even know that the way that we would go would lead us down this road.
Kind of answered this already, but I guess what really led you to embrace your Motswana heritage in music? What was that shift for you?
Honestly, I didn't. Again, it was around the pandemic when some real shit was going down, in terms of, you know, like a lot more racially fueled comments and like racially negative things coming towards me. So that was, to be honest, that was a small factor. I don't want to give that one, give that too much weight. But I think, in 2019, I lost my mom, who's Botswana, to cancer. And I think that, really, I know it really impacted me, like on an emotional and on a, like, you know, ethereal level, to be honest. But, you know, when you're living in North America, but your roots and your heritage is in Africa, or is, you know, farther away, and somebody important to you, kind of, you lose that connection. It feels like it's like a severing. So I think that losing my mom made me really open my eyes to how much more I need to work to maintain that connection and maintain that relationship with my, not necessarily just my family back home, but just my heritage. I think it was also part of the grieving process, just kind of like, you know, being more in tune with myself and like who I am at home as well as on stage. And it was kind of this sort of almost like stupefying moment where I was like, I'm making music, but it's not like, I assume that my heritage is in it because I'm making it. But I realized that there's a power in the process of being intentional with pulling that heritage into your art, kind of more proudly and more openly. So I think that was an unfortunate path that led me to kind of be more intentional with incorporating those sounds.
Yeah, I'm so sorry for your loss, but obviously you've turned it into something beautiful. So what drew you to Afro House as like a way to incorporate your heritage? Like, what was it about the genre or the style that you felt like resonated with your sound already?
I mean that one is feels like an obvious answer, but it's what I grew up listening to, you know, Kwaito though, and Afro House was just like the mainstream music in Botswana. You said you're from Mozambique. I'm not sure if that was also the same case.
Definitely.
Yeah, so that's all I heard. So it just kind of felt natural to go down that path to be more intentional with the music that I'm making. Also, I just love it. I think it's like, it slaps. It's good.
It's one of my favorite as well. I'm always playing it.
Yeah.
So It's, and there's so much range as well that you can do within Afro.
Yeah, that's it. I love when it's like kind of droney and repetitive and you can kind of get into the zone, but I also love when, you know, there's like, I mean, I feel like this is the way that I went, like when there's like just a dope beat and like a really poignant vocal line, or, you know, there's vocals that kind of pierce through the music as well. So I just feel like there's so many ways you can do Afro house and they're all good.
Out in the deserts where I lay my heart, and I know that I'm holding on to something that's part of my soul. Simple directions never felt so easy when left and right keep meeting in the middle of the road.
Overwhelmed by the state of the world, you're not alone. Join Mosaic for How to Choose Between Apathy and Empathy in an Overwhelming World, a workshop designed to help you navigate burnout, cultivate compassion, and balance your mental and emotional well-being. Join us on April 11th at the Hall Building. For more info, visit our website at mosaic.org.
Push that button.
Yo,
how about this one? Say something quick. The security guard coming.
What?
Say something quick.
Say what?
The Caribbean Callaloo, the 2 times award-winning show on CJLO. 1690 on your AM dial every Saturday from 2 p.m. till 4 p.m. 514-848-7471.
Who's that girl, boy?
You can't talk, but you can see her.
You are listening to CJLO 1690 AM.
So how has it been in Canada, your experience since you started OK Naledi? And obviously, you're very open about your identity as queer, as Black, as Motswana. And how do you feel like the reception has been to that?
That's a great question, to be honest. Also, all of these questions are good. I have to segue and just say that these are great questions.
They're not
stereotypical, which is so lovely. So you're doing a great job. But yeah, I think that's the other kind of factor, you know, when I was in Botswana, I don't know what the case is in Mozambique right now, but when I was in Botswana growing up, it was illegal to be gay. So I never really felt like I can like authentically be myself. And so there's also not a lot of queer representation in music that comes out of Botswana or South Africa. It's definitely changing now, but definitely when I was growing up. So that was also kind of something I wanted to be very intentional about, was like openly queer, being openly myself, being openly non-binary, while stepping into this Afro house world and genre that is not necessarily been the most open to the queer community. Not talking about house, but specifically talking about Afro house, because house music kind of started in the queer scene in New York, so that's a whole different conversation. But yeah, the reception has been interesting, I think. That sounds like a mysterious answer, but it's like, prior to doing OK Naledi, I was making music using my English name, which was Kimberly. I don't go by Kimberly anymore. And it was more folky, kind of aligned with the music that you hear on the mainstream waves here in Canada. And when I switched over to doing OK Naledi, you know, on one side, a lot more, it opened up my kind of fan base to some extent, but it also kind of closed off opportunities. So I used to get a lot of requests for opening for bands that were touring. I used to get a lot of requests for, you know, filling in for projects for bands when I was Kimberly Sundstrom. And now that I'm Naledi Sundstrom and working in OK Naledi, there's a lot less of those requests, which I think is really interesting and like a very obvious point to the fact that, you know, systemic racism is still so present. It's just...
Do you think it's really in the name, or is it about you changing genres a little bit, or what do you think?
I'm not sure. It might be a combination of both. And I'm not saying that I haven't had great opportunities. I have, like, OK Naledi has been the best thing I could have done, but I just find it interesting that there's been a shift in terms of types of offers. So I think we get more festival offers and more, you know, larger scale offers, which is great, but less collaboration requests is, I guess that's what I'm trying to say. So maybe it's the genre, maybe people are scared to touch into the Afro house world, so who knows.
I guess I'm biased, but I feel like Naledi is a pretty accessible name as far as Southern African names go. So what's the problem?
Man, it is. I wholeheartedly agree with you on that one. And it's, I still get people being like, oh, that's too hard to say. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
The answer.
So yeah. Can you tell me a bit about the messages in Bones specifically? Obviously, I was able to read a bit, and I'm interested in hearing about Interlude because I'm queer as well, and so I thought like that was such a cute story behind it. But yeah, just tell us about some of the messages from your different tracks in Bones.
Sure. Let's start with Interlude. It's like one of my favorites, to be honest. You know, when I was in Botswana, I was very much in the closet. But one New Year's at a club, you know, there's no such thing as IDs back in the day. Yeah, everybody's going to the club at any age. I think I was 15 and I felt like I was experiencing love at first sight with another girl that was at the club. And in true queer lesbian world, like it manifested into absolutely nothing. We just danced together. And looked at each other and met at the same club for almost 2 years and nothing ever became of it. But it was this really powerful, palpable moment where I felt like my feelings and my internalized feelings were being validated because it felt like such a strong, impactful moment. And I love thinking back on that time, even though nothing, like no relationship, no big romantic scenario came out of it. Like the authentic feelings that came from it still feel very powerful. And so I wrote the song kind of from the perspective of my 15-year-old self falling in love with this girl for the first time. And just like, you know, that burning desire to try and do something, but also that deep fear of like, you know, the implications of what happens if you do something. So that's kind of where Interlude stems from.
Yeah, that's so sweet. I think sometimes the best situations are the ones that don't turn into anything, but you just have those memories of it.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you on that one. Maybe too many of those in my younger days, but I'm sorry for that now. Another one of my favorites from Bones is Confessions. So that's a song that I wrote. My dad is a white Canadian dude so I wrote that song from the perspective of him in his younger days. And when he was in his 20s, he decided, and he grew up in like small town Ontario farm. He was like grew up on a farm, like, you know, very, very small town life. And he decided that he wanted to see more of the world. And so he took a contract in Botswana. And naturally, while he was there, you know, seeing the world for the first time, he met my mom, who was basically an African queen. She was far, far, far removed from his level. She was so out of his league. but they fell in love. And it's just a song about them kind of meeting, falling in love, and choosing to like start a family during apartheid. So they met in the late 70s, which was still a very difficult time in Botswana because we bordered South Africa. And just, you know, during a difficult time, choosing to start a family, and many other incidences that I, you know, learned of with my parents growing up, where, you know, he had to have difficult conversations with his family, basically saying, like, if you don't accept my relationship with my soon-to-be wife, then you're either going to lose a son or you can have a relationship with us. So I wanted to write a song that was really positive and sweet and romantic, despite the undercurrents of the really difficult process of building that relationship during apartheid and, you know, racial fueling with his family. So that was the concept of that one.
How did your dad receive? Did he get to listen to the song?
Yeah, actually, both of my parents got to listen to it. My mom heard it before she passed away, and they both love it, which is great. I guess it could have gone the other way, but yeah, I think they're both very proud of. I think they're both very, very proud of that song, and yeah, I think it tells a really lovely side of their relationship.
To win your love, he never stood a chance. So I
So I'm curious, you spoke a little bit about your reception on the Canadian side. What about the African side? Obviously, they wouldn't have a problem with your name or the genre, but maybe your queerness could be a point of contention.
Yeah, I think that's that internalized fear is still very present. So, for example, or not for example, I mentioned that I went to Botswana in 2023 to, you know, just work on some music and collaborate with some local artists and kind of research what the music scene is looking like there these days, and also visit my family. But I've also brought my wife with me and invited her parents to come and visit and see. And her parents are from Canada, although her mom is originally South African, but that's a whole nother story. And so, you know, it was, for me, it was kind of a process of working through my own internalized fear and my own apprehension of introducing my family to my wife, who they knew. They knew I was married. They were very, you know, they've had a lot of years to kind of work through that. But when we went to my home village and brought my in-laws there, one of my aunts, who is definitely more conservative and a little bit more traditional, wore the two traditional wedding outfits while we were there. So that was, for me, that was like possibly one of the most powerful moments of acceptance from my family, for her to even take the time to put on the traditional wedding ceremony outfits. In terms of, so from my family perspective, I feel really grateful that they are supportive. We had a great time. They really, you know, worked and made the effort to be welcoming, and we just had a great time. You know, when you're in the village, you always have a good time. So that's great. In terms of when being out in Botswana, I still have to work through those internalized fears of acceptance. I still don't feel comfortable holding my wife's hand in public. I'm still conscientious when I'm out. You know, I try not to be, but it's still something that I fear. And it's a fear, you know, born out of like harm, fear of harm. So I think even though Botswana has decriminalized homosexuality as of 2019, I really do believe that there is progress to be more open and more forward, but there's still a long way to go. But on the other side, I attended my first Botswana Pride while I was there, which was, it's the third year that they've done it. So there are steps happening. There are organizations that are working towards making queerness more acceptable and more acknowledged and represented in Botswana, but it's still in, I feel like it's still in its infancy.
Yeah. Oh, just on a personal side note, like, it's nice to hear you say that, because obviously, you know, that's something that I hope I get to experience as well, having like, you know, be able to actually bring your identity to your family and have it be accepted. But obviously the fears are valid, you know, and they come a lot of stigma. But I was also wondering on the musical side, like, Have you done any performances in Botswana? Are you open to collabing with African artists? And what has that been like?
Yeah, I didn't do any performances while I was there. And growing up, the only performances I did was when I was in high school. So not quite the same, perspective. But I did have the opportunity to collaborate with an incredible artist while I was there. We worked on a song together and we're releasing it soon. And I feel like that was a really powerful, empowering and powerful moment, because I brought my little, like a little portable studio with me, and she would come over to the Airbnb that we were staying at. And she was really open to the experience of working with me, really excited about it. And never once had any notions of judgment, or, you know, sometimes you can tell when somebody's like giving you weird vibes. And she's also a ridiculously talented musician. So I was just excited to work with her. And I'm excited for this new song to come out. It really does kind of embody a lot more of the traditional style of Botswana music. with like some fresher flavors. So yeah, I think that's very exciting to be.
MRG Live presents Goldie Boutillier live in Montreal on Tuesday, April 8th. The acclaimed maritime singer-songwriter is kicking off her 2025 North American Goldie Montana tour with a cinematic performance that will include songs from her upcoming album. Come out to La Sala Rosa on April 8th for a night of retropop with an alt-country flair. This is one you won't want to miss. That's Goldie Boutillier, live at La Sala Rosa on Tuesday, April 8th. For tickets and more information, go to mrglive.com.
Welcome, salutations and various forms of greetings, friends. My name is Mr. Billets. And when I'm not enjoying good ragtime music and tap dancing, I like to listen to Grade A Explosives on Sunday from 4 to 6 p.m. on CJLO 1690 a.m. Now here's some kind of a cover of Frank Sinatra by a metal band. Take that, Hitler!
You are listening to CJLO 1690 AM.
Had an episode where I was talking about Miriam Makeba and Brenda Fassie. I don't know if you're familiar. Yeah. So that was for Women's Day. And I was talking about how, you know, their identity, Brenda Fassie was also openly queer at a time when It was very difficult to be that. And they were also both obviously making music during apartheid. And even though they don't necessarily identify as like political artists, I feel like their music has a lot of value politically and a lot of like strong messaging in terms of social justice. So I was curious, like, in your music, is that something that you want to incorporate, or do you see like a value in that?
Again, great question. And yes, excellent. Side note, I went to Botswana to intentionally do a research project in 2023, and had the opportunity to record a song in the studio that Brenda Fassi recorded a lot of her music. So that was very cathartic for me, very, very powerful feeling.
I went on like a deep dive about Brenda Fassi and everything that she's done, and I was just like even more in love with who she is as an artist.
Wholeheartedly. I agree. And I feel like Christmas isn't Christmas without Brenda Fassi.
A party isn't a party without Brenda Fassi.
I agree. I think that's a really valid point. You know, they would they never explicitly or openly said that they were political artists, but, you know, them stepping on the stages, looking the way they looked and singing the way that they sung was inherently political. And I think that is true of any marginalized artist, even today. I feel like anytime anybody who looks like me or looks not non-white and steps on a stage, just by stepping on that stage, you're making a political statement, whether you're trying to, before you even open your mouth. I think the act of being present on the stage and in the industry is still very much a political statement and a political act. Especially being queer right now and the kind of volatile situation of the world that we're living in, with queer and trans bodies being kind of more politicized and attacked. So yeah, I think that I try to be more intentional with my writing, and you know, even small acts of power, like using she/her pronouns when I'm talking about a love interest in a song. Those small things, when I first started writing music, like with the intention of releasing it, was really difficult, and now I don't find it that difficult. But I know it's still very important to have that. I recently had top surgery, literally last month, actually. Thank you. So I feel like my writing is shifting again to kind of be more open about talking about that on stage as well as in my music. So I think when you're a marginalized person, and I'm not saying anything that you don't feel or haven't heard, I know that, but when you're a marginalized person, when you're a Black person outwardly, when you're a queer person outwardly, not outwardly, visibly, you're automatically making a statement by taking a step on a stage or releasing music. So, yeah, I don't know if that answered the question, but I really like that question. And I want to marinate in it for a while. It's a really good question.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I feel like it does answer the question. It is just by existing and just by being in the space, like, you're already making a statement. Yeah. And obviously, you know, artists are representation for a lot of people. So it's important as well for people to, you know, have someone that looks like them and is in that space. You know, the format of the show in Afro Archives is, have you ever heard of Versus? It was something that was like very popular during the pandemic.
Yeah. Remind me what that is again.
So it's basically, it would be two artists. They were doing like a lot of throwbacks. And then they would do like a hit for hit, like one artist performs and then the other one, and it would kind of go like back and forth, like a battle per se.
Oh yeah.
So that's kind of where Afro Archives was born from, that idea. So my question for you would be, if you had to do a versus battle with any other artist, who would you pick?
Ooh. My first thought is Liquid Deep. I don't know if you know Liquid Deep.
Yes, I love Liquid Deep.
Yeah, that was my first thought, but I want to think about that a little bit more now. There's this, I can't remember her name right now, but there's this artist from South Africa.
Is
oh,
it
I can't. What's that?
Shekinah?
Big blue hair.
Oh, Moonchild Sonali?
Yes. Yeah, there we go. That would be my choice. I would get obliterated though.
She has like big ropey blue twists.
Yes,
Moonchild.
I would get obliterated by her and I would take it.
Yeah. Just to finish up, I guess, what are any, you told us about, you have a new song coming out. Are there any other performances, projects, things that we can look out for, where people can find you and things like that?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we're just in the process of, finalizing some summer dates and some summer tour things. So, you know, all the Pride festivals, we try to do as many Pride festivals as possible. But right now, we're currently working, not necessarily on a new project, but a new path of OK Naledi, which is kind of going to really delve into the topics on, you know, Black joy, queer joy, trans bodies, non-binaryisms, and just really kind of explore that. So we started performing some of those songs, and we're going to jump into the studio and start recording that and putting that out there. So that's the thing that is currently on my brain right now that I'm very excited about.
Yeah, sounds good. So Pride, people can be on the lookout.
Absolutely.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for, you know, coming and sharing with me.
Okay, everyone, that brings us to the end of our interview with OK Naledi. A big shout out to them for coming on and being the first interviewee on Afro Archives. I really appreciate it, and I hope you all took something valuable away from that conversation. So just to close out the show, we are going to be listening to Don't by OK Naledi and Frankie G. And this is just a reminder that everything I played here today is all from their album Bones, and the playlist will be on the website and more information will be on the Instagram, which is afro.archives with two S's. I hope you guys have a great rest of your day and enjoy the last song.
Everyone. This is Remy from